Campus FM presenta Storia Oggett, le produzioni e presentazioni tra Emanuel Buttigieg e Liam Gauci.
Dr. Paul Olivia proudly received the constitutional instruments and displayed them to the people.
Combattenti! Terra, mare e l'aria!
And unless it was possible to change Mr. Mintoff's mind, I do not believe that the facilities that he was prepared to grant would have been adequate, and therefore I don't think any defense agreement would have been possible.
The people of Malta have voted at the last general election, barely 4 months ago, for union with Britain.
Meħba, d-istamija ta' Campus FM, Emanuel Buttigieg u Liam Gauci bi-pjaċiri l-għawka mal-program Storja Oġġett. Fl-episodju tal-lum nil-għaw maħna l-Dr. Valeria Vanesio, lecturer fil-Department of Library, Information and Archive Sciences fl-Università ta' Malta. Il-qasam ewlieni tal-istudji tagħha hija l-istorja tal-arkivi tal-Ordni ta' San Juan, b'enfasi fuq ix-xenari Maltin u Taljani. Kisbet id-dottorat tagħha in Archival and Library Science minn Sapienza University f'Ruma u għandha żewġ diplomi, wieħed mill-Arkivju di Stato ta' Ruma u l-ieħor mill-Arkivju Apostoliku Vatikanu. Ħadmet bħala postdoc u arkivista mal-Malta Study Center li huwa bbażat fl-Istati Uniti bejn l-2018 u l-2020 fejn kienet involuta f'numru ta' inizjattivi fosthom proġetti ta' digitizzazzjoni u ħolqien ta' qodod avvanzati ta' riċerka marbuti ma' l-istoria tal-Ordni ta' San Juan u Malta. Valeria ħadet ukoll ħsieb proġett ta' 3 snin li kien jinvolvi riorganizzazzjoni tal-fondi storiċi fl-Arkivju Maġistrali ta' Ruma bejn l-2014 u l-2017. Illum ma' Valeria sar inkun qed nitkellmu dwar dokument sabiħ ħafna li jinsab fl-arkivju tal-Catholic University of Washington li ġi digitizzat mill-Malta Study Center. Fil-fatt tistgħu taqraw dan id-dokument billi tmorru fil-link li ser tkun disponibbli fil-Facebook page ta' Department tal-Istorja u ta' Campus FM. It-titlu ta' dan id-dokument, da' xejn twil ħanet l-ewwel parti, huwa Ristretto dello Stato Antico e Moderno del Sacro Ordine Gerosolomitano tal-1804. Dan l-episodju partikolari ser ikun bl-Ingliż. Valeria, thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning. Thanks to you. Very happy to be here today. Thanks.
Our pleasure. As I explained in Maltese just now, we're going to be talking about this very interesting document from 1804. So we'll start off precisely why you chose this document, and can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, so this document, first of all, is written in Italian, and as you can, it's dated 1804, and you can already understand from the title that this is a very interesting record concerning the Order of St. John of Jerusalem in a very particular moment of its history, and also concerning the everlasting mutual relationship between the knights and the island. Why this document? That's a very interesting question. I've chosen it for more than one reason. First, this is part of an incredible collection of records preserved at the Catholic University of Washington, part of the rare books and special collection too. The records were digitized by the center in 2016, and the digital copies are now available online for all of you on our platform, HML Reading Room. And Dr. Gullo and I are currently studying them and cataloging them in order to make them fully accessible from the standpoint of their contents and their history, and also to reconstruct their original context when possible, of course. Another very important reason is that this report contains a summary of the history of the order, its legal nature as an institution, and its administrative structure until the loss of Malta in 1798. And at the arrival of the French, of course, but also something more. The report tells us a more complex story, or more than one if we want. First, it is a glimpse of the political situation in Europe in 1804. And we know how complicated was the balance of powers at that time.
Very complicated.
Very complicated and fascinating, of course, for us.
Yes.
Second, the record includes some considerations from the particular perspective, probably of a knight or somebody who supported the order. And the author of the document reflects about what efforts will be required for the knights to achieve the restoration of the order in Malta, make internal reforms, and reestablish its socio-political position in Europe. For example, he's writing about new diplomacy, education and training of new novices. This is very interesting, speaking about a collegio or things like this. And, of course, rights and duties of the perfect knight. So who wrote it was trying to redefine a model for the order.
There's no convent to go, but he's doing this
because they were trying to reconstruct the convent, even if there were just a few knights.
So here there's already two very interesting things that you're saying.
Yes.
One, that the order is still trying in 1804 to come back to Malta.
Yes.
This is the home, no? This
for
is
long.
Where they want to
exactly.
Be. And the other was so interesting, redefining the knight.
Redefining the model of a knight.
So they understand that times have changed.
Yes, absolutely.
They need to update somehow.
Yeah, it's an archaic situation and they want to change.
Yes. They need to change to survive. That's the point.
But you can't change too much then, no?
No, you have to balance. But
it's,
we will
it's
see.
It's an interesting balance.
It's an interesting balance.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Also today.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So the third reason here is the least but not the last for me, the archival dispersion of the documents of the order. It is a topic that I particularly care about. 1798 represents a fracture between the history of the order and the history of its archives, of course, both at the central and peripheral level. After this date, and also in the early 19th century in Europe, the records of the priories and commanderies and hospitals were scattered everywhere in Europe, some of them partially destroyed. Others merge in local state collections, today national and public archives and libraries. And many of them ended up in private hands, and this is very interesting. As an archivist, the archival dispersion and how to make accessible this huge and fragmented archival heritage are the most challenging, but also fascinating parts of my work.
Yes, that is so interesting, what happens to the archive, any archive.
Any.
When the institution that created it somehow loses it.
Yes.
And this is what happens to the order. No, they have to leave, but they can't take the archive with them.
And it was a problem, of course.
It's like the child separated from the mother almost. No,
yes.
You lose a bit of yourself.
Yes. And who is the mother and who is the child?
Yes.
Indeed.
Chicken and egg. Once. Yes.
So this document, talking about 1804, talking about how to rekindle the knights in a different form, maybe. But do we have an idea who wrote this? Who was the creator of this? We're always talking about objects on our program. Who was the creator of this document? Do we have an idea? And also, the context was because they have no home. So he needs to understand what their aims in life or their raison d'etre is. Sorry, it was a very long question.
No, it's a very interesting, a key question, if I may say, in our research today with Dr. Kuhl about this document. So the author of this document is unknown for now, but it is not difficult to understand that who wrote it was a knight or a former member of the order, or at least somebody who supported this institution. But what makes this document quite unique, in my opinion, is the context, as you said. Let's go back to the end of the 18th century for just a few minutes, if I may. The 18th century particularly meant for the order the end of its political project, no? This project aimed at achieving full both political and diocesan sovereignty on the archipelago to become a modern state, no? On a par with the others in the European scenario. So during this period, the order passed through a crucial metamorphosis of its identity by losing a big part of its religious nature to become a real monarchy and a real state into the state. So this process was finally interrupted by the internal crisis triggered by the French factions into the Council of Government, of course, and by the arrival of the French army in 1798. But internal fractures also were the result of a long-term decline, in my opinion. Taking into account that the traditional values of nobility and knighthood that were the core of the identity of the order and were almost completely weakened from a long time, the knights needed to totally reconsider their ambitions and made some compromises to survive and adapt to political and social revolutions in Europe. So at the end of the 18th century, the order gradually lost its originary military function that characterized the most of all and also legitimated a large part of its history. And more, its intrinsic noble nature made the order a natural enemy of the revolution.
If I may stop you,
yes.
You're very right in saying that maybe we're always concerned with the military decline and all that, and which it's very debatable if it actually was a decline. But these ideals, I think, especially in 1804, the world is changing. We have had nearly 25 years of the French ideals of revolution, and we're not talking about everybody being equal, which obviously was totally against the order.
Yes, the structure, not the identity of the order.
Exactly, which also goes into the reason for this document, to restructure within a new global framework. I'm using very Google words at the moment, but it's because sometimes we find ourselves in these situations today. And I think the order was, whoever wrote this was, you know, realizing that times are changing and maybe the order to survive had to update itself.
Yes, to update itself according to tradition and the future, of course, the modernity.
Yes.
So it is very hard, as you said, to describe in a few words such a complex situation, with the risk of underestimate other factors, no, and events which influence this process. What I would like to explain here is that from the standpoint of the institutional identity, the Knights lost the understanding of the legal and constitutional structure of the order. And they had to deal with the 1798 crisis, they were not able to properly face it at all. That's the problem. Before and after the expulsion from Malta. So in 18, yes.
Given how deep the crisis was, it's even more surprising that they managed to survive
at all.
I mean, yes, completely dismembered and bankrupt and everything, but there's a core that
resiliency
to go for and create the document as well, which is interesting. So let's end for the moment on that note, and we're going to have a short music interlude, but do come back with us because there's much more to discover about this document with Dr. Vanesio.
Thank you.
l-ura għattini parti tal-program taħna Storja Oġġett, fejn l-lum din nitkellmu ma' Dr. Valeria Vanasio u għankomplu nitkellmu maħħa dwar dan il-dokument li xtaqet taqsam maħna, dokument li miktub fl-1804. Valeria, we're talking about this document, we're talking about how the order has to rekindle itself, reinvent itself, and ironically, although it looks like an archaic order with nobility being the key factor,
yes.
Ironically, the order was also democratic. And we're
in some ways.
In some ways, yes, primus inter pares.
Yes.
And we're talking about, obviously, but they are electing their leader. Not a lot of countries in Europe at the time were electing their leader, practically none.
No.
And if we're talking about the French Revolution that introduced democracy, by 1797, surely, democracy was non-existent in this great nation that we always say gave democracy to the world.
Yes.
So it only took nearly 10 years and democracy was out of the window. It's starting to get very complicated.
Yes.
And I'm going to make it even more complicated. 1804, what was the situation of the world?
Wow.
In 18, and the order.
And the order, well, in 1804, when this report we are discussing today was written, there were for the order only a few knights who found a refuge in Sicily. Sicily, and it was another complicated story too.
A very complicated story.
In fact, they had to move in 1826 from Sicily too. So they elected Grand Master Giovanni Battista Tommasi, who lived until 1805, if I remember well. He was the last until the end of the 19th century. So they only had just lieutenants in that period, of course, and they had to move from Sicily. So the question became at that time, how to reconstruct the order from its ashes, no? And so how to rebuild the organizational structure, restoring the administration and find and reshape the identity of an order in the eyes of the European powers. So despite the Treaty of Amiens, as we know, that's the context, the main context, Malta was never given back to the order, and all of the efforts made by the survived knights were useless completely. But they dreamed for long to come back to the island. That's the point. Indeed, if I may, I would like to quote a sentence from the original document. So, perfino ogni individuo dell'ordine, desiderando la continuazione e stabilità sua, non può dispensarsi alle indagini di tutti i mezzi efficaci per rendere interessante il ritorno dell'ordine in Malta, base della sussistenza sua, di home. Onde, fra gli ostacoli che si incontrano, alla qualcosa non vi è che la divina provvidenza, che possa dalle sue fondamenta ottenerne il vasto ed incommensurabile progetto. So I will translate it more or less like, every member of the order should engage in the mission of re-establishing the order in Malta and make it possible in the eyes of the rest of the European powers to find a place in that very complicated balance, no? This project could only happen with the favor of the divine providence that could move Europe from its foundation. So it was an European problem at that time also to find an identity for the states after the revolution and all of this.
Of course,
changings. So returning to the strict relationship between the island and the knights, Malta was essential for the order. The territoriality was still considered the key building block of the knight's identity as it has been for centuries. Since we know what happened later, this is both sad because they never returned to Malta, of course, but also amazing because at the end of all, they rebuilt the order from scratch by balancing tradition and compromises. That's amazing.
This reminds me also of how when later in 1814-15 at the Congress of Vienna, the representative of the order there makes this argument essentially where he says in a reconstructed Europe of monarchies, what better guarantee can you have than the Order of St. John?
Yes.
The Order of Malta. I mean, we are nobility, we are monarchy, we are the church. Help us and it will be a bulwark for you all against these forces of change and so on. Unfortunately, the argument doesn't sell because I suppose Britain wouldn't give up the island.
Yes.
But I can see the roots of it here.
Yes.
So clearly the idea has been, you know, in the oven baking for a while.
For long.
It's fascinating.
And still keeping Malta as an integral part of the identity of the order.
Absolutely. Mm. Territoriality. And Malta, of course, yes. For first. So that's that's amazing, yes.
So we know when it's created.
Mm-hmm.
Is it used for a long time, or does it end up on a shelf and forgotten?
So probably it was created to reflect, no, on the actual situation, to prepare the order to the future, no, actual situation, the future of the order, but most of all to encourage its survived members to reconstruct this fragmented institution. And years and years later, it was probably found by somebody on the ancient market, probably. Ended in a private collection, and now we can read it as one of the pieces of this very complex mosaic.
So what is the story of this object? And, you know, who are the owners? Do we have any idea from what did it go through in life, you know?
Yes, that's another very interesting question. It is not always easy to trace the story of these objects. Actually, we are trying to reconstruct its provenance. It is very important for in an archival research. So the report was written in Italy, maybe in Sicily, where the convent had its provisional headquarters.
In fact, yes. I wanted to ask you this. We don't know a lot about the convent in Sicily.
No.
Do you have any information?
Yes, I was lucky enough to work at the Magistral Archives in Rome there during the next years, and I reconstructed the archive of the content. Actually, I discovered them, the papers, through my master thesis, and we managed to, together with the Conservatory of the Order, to reconstruct the structure of this archive of the convent. And it is very fascinating because they were just a few nights, but they were trying to gather together to have a council to move from the standpoint of diplomacy towards the other European countries.
Where were they situated in Sicily?
Why?
Where?
I'm sorry. First in Messina until 1803, I think, and then to Catania, in Catania, until 1826.
Sicily, of course, is the only part of Italy that doesn't fall to the French.
Yes.
And it's under a form of British protectorate at the time.
Yes, in some ways.
In some ways. And in a way, that's what protects it from the French, the presence of the British fleet around the island.
With the Queen being the sister of Marie Antoinette.
Maria Carolina.
Yeah, Maria Carolina.
Yes, correct.
It gets a little bit complicated.
And of course,
family relationships.
Emma Hamilton and all that.
Hamilton, Nelson, and Murat. About to become king of Naples.
Yes.
And they're all women who have links to Malta through the order as well, which is fascinating. But let's not deviate.
Yeah, it's another story.
So we're in Sicily? So
until 1826? Yes.
Then?
During the second half of the last century, probably, the report was acquired by Carol Saliba, who was a native of Malta and a commander of the St. John Ambulance Brigade in the United States, and was donated by his son, Alex Saliba, in 1999 to the Catholic University of Washington. So, collecting mania in this history was, for the documents of the order, both an element of dispersion but also preservation. From one side, documents were extracted from their original context, unfortunately, intentionally or not, and maybe sold. On the other hand, they were preserved and saved from the oblivion, of course.
Mm.
So, considering that the nature of the archive is being the natural product of the activity of an institution, and being strictly related to this one, it is quite fascinating, even if it's not uncommon, how sometimes the history of the records follows other pathways in comparison with the one of the institution.
Mm.
So in this case, also behind the ocean in America.
It crossed the ocean.
Yes.
Literally. So this was created for personal use to an extent. What is its sentimental value? You know, what do you do with something like this, Valeria, with this kind of document?
You have to, I think you needed to convince the other members of the order to move in the right direction accordingly. Yes.
To grab you know, the bull by the horns and take it from
to
there.
To find themselves.
Do you have any historical sources that you know, helps you understand this object a little bit more, you know, and the people who actually created this.
Yes. So many other very interesting documents of this period are in Saliba collection, as I said, at the Catholic University. But Catholic University also preserves the Foster stamp collection. Foster Stern was another member of the order, yes, who donated the collection. And another important source of information, as we were saying, is the archive of the convent after 1798, preserved at Magistral Archives.
I see. Okay.
We're starting to near the end of this, Valeria. We've mentioned a few times Dr. Daniel Gullo and the Malta Study Center. Would you say something briefly about his work and the center?
Yes, the center is working very hard to preserve, as you know, the history and the archival heritage and library heritage, of course, of the island and the Order of St. John. We engage with every day with my colleague Claudia Garrada, Society Director here in Malta, and Dr. Gullo in preserving this heritage. We digitized the records, of course, to make them available online. And my former role, because now I am a lecturer, as you said, but I'm still collaborating with the center, is to catalog this document and make them accessible. Mm. We are also creating an authority file database for the authorized form of the name of all the archival creators.
And what is interesting, well, you're the archivist, we're the historians. we use what you create for us. Is the way that the technology is helping now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's completely wonderful that you can access documents. I mean, in this case, this one is in the United States. At the moment, pandemic conditions would be completely impossible to access it for us.
And also to reconstruct them virtually according to the provenance, the original provenance, to connect these records in a network.
Yeah, so in a virtual way, they're coming back together.
Yes.
Although physically they've been separated for...
As the order had to do in 1804.
So yes. it's a nice, you know, full circle.
Yes,
of
it is.
We are nearing the end of our interview, and I would like to thank you once again.
Thank you. Thanks to you.
That you accepted our invitation and we spoke about this lovely document and we learned so much about it. And I would suggest to our listeners that they can actually look it up on our Facebook page. You've got the link. And they can actually see this document that we have been talking about. Jina li jimgawċi fl-mkien ma' Manuel Buttigieġ għal darboħra inselmulkom u grazzi tal-lukontu maħna.
Għadkom kem smajtu Storja Oġġett, il-produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni ta' Emanuel Buttigieġ fl-imkien ma' Liam Gawċi.